Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trundy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, New Delhi mob. Welcome back to your Yarni Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. As BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber call to New Delhi number 1-800-422-416. Like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the beautiful country of ours. Welcome back. National Talk Black. Have your say and yarn up strong, you mob. Now, evidence of climate harms given on country by those on the front line of climate disaster at hearings for landmark Australian climate case. Faced with rising sea levels with distressing inaction on climate change, in October 2021, Uncle Pabai and Uncle Paul filed the Australian climate case against the Australian government for failing to prevent climate change. The homes of people in the Torres Straits could disappear beneath the rising seas, making them Australia's first climate change refugees. With that, we're going to catch up a yarn there with Auntie McRose and talk about this space. Hello, a very good morning. Auntie McRose, how are you?
Yes, good morning.
Thank you very much for coming to the program, Auntie. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob were you from, Auntie?
Well, I was born on Saibai Island, lived up on the Cape.
Yes.
Cape is my home on the tip of Australia. I'm from, my father's side is the crocodile clan and my mother's side is carpet snake.
Okay.
And my mob is Tabu and Kadal.
Beautiful. Thank you, Auntie. Thank you very much. So, on country evidence given in landmark climate case on the front line of Australia's climate disaster. So, it sounded like we have a win here, Auntie, do we?
No, I'm actually in the car.
Okay, yes, okay.
I just parked the car.
Okay, okay. But we're talking about the court case for the climate.
Yes.
For the climate case? Landmark climate case? You want to elaborate on that, please, Auntie?
That could be happening later on this week, yes.
So, and the journey with Uncle Powerboy and Uncle Paul, who filed the Australian climate case against the Australian government. There we are in the courthouse and fighting to protect First Nation people in the Torres Straits of sea rising.
Yes. Now, that's very, very important.
Of course it is.
I think that's been going on for quite some time. As you know, there are out of the 17 islands in the Torres Strait, there's 7 inundated, and two of them on the top western islands, which are Boigo and Saibai, is currently where the cases are taking place.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a long journey for our people and for them to uncles to be the plaintiffs and with the support of the communities
exactly.
Trying to pursue and look for a better outcome what the government can assist
Auntie
in helping
McRose,
our people in these vulnerable islands. And
the sea is rising, isn't it?
I think that's what the most important case or the cry of this case is about, is trying to look at some sort of solutions in a way how best we can save those islands.
Exactly. Well, it is the fact that the sea is rising and Torres Strait Islanders.
There?
Yeah, can you hear me, Aunt? I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hello?
No. We'll try and get Auntie McRose back. Auntie McRose, Saibai Island Elder, and talking about on-country evidence given in landmark climate case on the front line of Australia's climate disaster. We'll try and get her back and continue the conversation. But in the significant next step of the landmark case, hearings will take place on Boigu, Badu and Saibai Islands and in Cairns. And we'll continue that, Jan. I think we do have her here online. Auntie McRose, you there?
Yeah,
I lost you there.
Off.
I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me. But continuing that conversation, global climate is real. And the sea is rising, and Torres Strait Islanders, they're in a very vulnerable situation, aren't they?
That's right, very vulnerable. It's more serious than it was before.
Yes.
It's now become very important for the government to pay full attention.
Yes.
For the people that are living on these low-lying islands in the Torres Strait.
Well, they say that greenhouse emissions need to be reduced by 74% by 2030.
That's right.
By 2030. And they're not operating towards that, are they?
They're not. They're not at all. They're not even listening to that.
Mm.
And I mean, you know, the other thing that I'm really, really, what's the word in English?
Concerned?
Yeah, really concerned is, you know, the people that are sitting in Canberra making the decisions
yes.
for our people around Australia, including Torres Strait. They haven't been to Torres Strait at all, not even to the outer islands. They've been maybe to Thursday Island, which is the administrative island, but never out to the islands where there's a greater effect and where
yes.
the things are happening.
Yes.
And this is one of my colleagues and my concern and my get the government
to really pay
full attention and come to the islands and
yes.
see it for themselves, how it is, instead of just putting up the seawalls, which are not very effective at all.
Mm, exactly.
And, you know, seeing the situation with Torres Strait side, the very treacherous waters in the world, when there's a monsoon season, there's no way that our people are going to be saved from those seawalls because water is still coming.
So we need to act now. We need to act now.
Over the seawalls into the villages and into the roads.
Exactly.
And that affects everything.
Yes,
everything
exactly.
about well-being on those islands. They're very low-lying islands.
Well, we're talking about life.
It's very pivotal and important. The duty of care of this government of Australia to look after our people and to see for themselves how serious it is, the condition.
Very serious.
On these islands and how it's effective.
Of course.
For our people to live in there every day. To see the changes and patterns of weather.
Well, they need to
on the islands. They can't hunt anymore. They have to go further.
Yes.
From their hunting grounds. They can't garden anymore.
Mm.
They have to wait for the cargo ship to come every week to deliver the goods, the fruit and vegetables.
Mm.
Sometimes in the monsoonal season, those cargo boats are delayed because
yes.
of the treacherous waters.
Exactly.
So can you see that the people that are in there are really suffering in a way?
Sure, but if they're not careful, there'd be no islands to go to.
Support or anything to help them out.
Mm.
Except that they believe in God, and they are in that spiritual sense that these are God-given islands for our people.
Mm. Yes.
So they live harmoniously and still continue, but knowing that there are changes around you in our environment.
Yes, very, very much so. Very much so. Auntie, can you hear me there?
You there?
Yeah, no, I lost Auntie again. That's Auntie McRose, a Saibai elder, and talking about the on-country evidence given in landmark climate case on the front line of Australia's climate disaster. So we're talking about the Torres Strait Islanders who are facing the rising of the sea, making them Australia's first climate change refugees if the government's not careful. And that's the conversation there. Have you saying Yana Strong? Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Thank you.
Yeah, the beautiful voice of Kian, Better Things. Hope better things are happening with you mob out there. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. Call the number Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and come to you live from First National Radio Station here in Cairns on your Yidinji Country, BBM, Bumma Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And go across the country thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service. Give us a call, 1-800-422-416. Now, Australians want to see more government support for the stolen generations. Against the backdrop of Sorry Day, research released today by Caritas Australia shows that two-thirds of Australians believe it is important for federal government to address the legacy of the stolen generation. This sentiment is even stronger amongst younger Australians, with 82% of 18 to 34-year-olds believing that addressing the legacy is important. And the time is now to address the legacy. Our stolen generation are getting older, and we must listen and learn from them in order to heal as a nation. With that, we're going to catch up a yarn with Christine Razzi, First Australian Programs Association Director. And on the line, we have Christine. Christine, good morning. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, sister, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
Oh, look, I'm Yamaji from Western Australia.
Okay.
I've been throughout WA, Queensland. I used to live in Cairns.
Okay, good, yes.
And throughout the far north there.
Good.
And now located in Darwin with on Larrakia land.
Beautiful. And big shout out to the mob there, Larrakia. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So Australians want to see more government support for the stolen generations. And look, well, stolen generations are getting older and if not passing on. So they need to act now. And to me, sometimes it feels they're like, well, they're not acting. It's like, wait till they all pass and then we can just move on.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, sad.
I think, you know, the recent polls have been, very much indicated that two-thirds of Australians think that it's really important for the federal government to address the legacy of stolen generations. And you know, interesting also that the younger generations feel more strongly about this, with 79% of Gen Z and millennials who think it's really important.
Well, sister, when you look at we are, as First Nation people, we are storytellers. So our elders have passed on the stories, and the good stories and the bad stories and the atrocities, how we were treated, how they were treated, and we still carry that. And there's the generational trauma as well, you know. And if they're not acting on stolen generation, it still cuts to the bone for our younger ones.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we had a beautiful event the other week with one of our partners, the uncles of Kinchella Boys Home out of Kempsey, and we invited them to tell their stories. And it's what they say, the most important part is about telling your story and, you know, explaining what happened and sharing what happened, their experiences. Mm. And I believe that by telling our story each time, we're actually able to help ourselves heal.
Yes.
You know, that by sharing it to our mob, sharing it to others, and, you know, the Kinchella Boys Home, Aboriginal Corporation, you know, they travelled this year for the 15th anniversary of the apology down to Canberra.
Yes.
You know, and I think it's still in the shadows.
Of course
there's,
it is.
There's kind of not enough. They're screaming out for the support, you know, and it's not just for Kinchella, it's for all of the stolen generation.
Of course, exactly.
Yeah.
And we as First Nation people, we feel sometimes we're hearing or the attitude of build a bridge, get over it, you know. It's in the past, live in the past, you know. Move on. But Australia's got a history, good or bad, black or white. But the history needs
Absolutely.
To be told, and they need to own it. The government, Australia needs to own its history, black and white, good and bad.
Absolutely, Trevor. And, you know, I think I've been approached on a number of times throughout just having conversations with a range of different people.
Mm.
And it's kind of like, well, I didn't do it.
Exactly, yes.
You know, it wasn't me that was responsible.
Yeah, but
you know, I kind of explain around, the, you know, the intergenerational trauma that not only happened to the people of the stolen generation, but it was through all the effects of colonisation that their parents, their grandparents, which affected their growing up and then having to grow up in the missions or homes or those kind of things. And then, you know, they refer to themselves, the uncles, as being, you know, and as everyone most likely would do, as being kidnapped. You know, their physical hardship, their punishment that they had to endure, the cruelty, the abuse, physical, psychological and sexual.
Mental, spiritual and all the above. And they carry that for the whole of their life. And if not acknowledged, I mean, when we're talking about apology, when we're talking about serious apology, when we're talking about recognition and acknowledgement, that is good medicine.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So a lot of work still to be done. You
know, yeah. And I think, you know, the polls also kind of indicated around that, you know, two-thirds of Australians feel that the government needs to provide this, you know, and more support to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities when it comes to health issues. Like, closing the gap is such a large talking point, and, you know, there's more need also for education when it also comes to the stolen generation. It's a part of the history, as you've just said.
Yes.
And, you know, back when I went to school, we just learnt, you know, the norms of colonialism.
Captain Cook, the white sails.
And settlement.
Yes.
And the settlement, you know, rather than, you know, what actually happened and the stories of that, you know, the massacres, the removals, the policies and all of that. So I think, yes, it is. And, you know, working in the field of community development, we actually address a lot of issues that affect Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and here at Caritas Australia. And our partners, their programs include areas of cultural experience, art, tourism, cultural healing and safeguarding, suicide, Aboriginal-led carbon sequestration and verification, women's, children's and youth and youth justice programs. You know, and it's by our partners, our communities from the grassroots, telling stories and educating and keeping people aware and informing them of the issues that actually affect us.
Exactly.
We have the answers.
Of course we do.
On how to deal with this.
And it shouldn't only come from states and territories. It's got to come from federal government down and across the country. Yes.
Yep. And I think, you know, the movement around, you know, the closing the gap targets, we're still failing. You know, the government is still failing to appropriately, you know, basically fund those correct areas or the areas that most need it. And, you know, as we've been doing for quite some time, many years, been crying out for that support. And, you know, we've support the Voice here at Caritas Australia, and, you know, we encourage everybody to inform themselves, educate themselves on what it is and, you know, the referendum and how this can help them to make an informed decision based on their morals and values. The important thing is around it is that it will make a difference.
It's
not a quick fix.
No, it's not.
But it's a step in the right direction. It's a part of the foundation to moving towards, you know, movement for us as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to have a voice.
And that foundation you're talking about, that's part of closing the gap as well. You know what I mean? In all aspects of First Nation life and living in this country, on country, you know?
Yeah.
So still a lot of work to be done.
Absolutely.
Christine, thank you very much for yarning. Can you tell us a bit about Caritas Australia, please.
Yeah, look, we're actually an international humanitarian aid and development organisation.
Okay.
And my role is Associate Director for the First Australians Program. So yes. I look after the Australian partners. We have two in the Northern Territory, four in New South Wales, and one in South Australia. So from a point of an international, we've been around for quite some time. I think we're celebrating our 60th birthday next year.
Okay.
And the First Australian Program has been around since 1972. So we've also been around for quite some time in the organisation. And we've had a range of different various partners. And I think our objective is about, you know, creating the right environment with our partners, working with our partners in a culturally safe way, being able to give them the opportunity to work with their communities by funding their programs and what they look to put on the ground once they've, you know, through consultation with their communities and then, you know, being able to sit down with the mob and kind of work on what's going to work for them.
Exactly. And it's from the inside out, isn't it? I mean, it was what I'm picking up, you know. You'll go to a community, as you spoke earlier, well, we all know that we've got the answers to the problems. We've got the solutions, but it's got to come from the inside out, not someone coming in with the so-called action and what we need to be doing and toeing the line.
Absolutely. And you know, that's the bad taste in the mouth that many have had over the years, is that it's been really bad business throughout history, and that's exactly what has happened. And I think, you know, there are slow steps towards the acknowledgement that there needs to be more conversation, more yarns with the people. Because, yeah, like I say, they know what's the best way of doing it, and they, meaning governments and organisations, etc., also have to acknowledge our ways of knowing, doing, working and talking.
Yes.
You know, we talk about things differently. We see it, and they need to acknowledge we've got a First Australian lens. We've got how we can see it working best.
And exactly.
I think that's kind of changing. Hopefully it'll be, you know, more so with in the event of successful campaign, voice campaign and the referendum.
And as mentioned earlier, Christy, when you look at the sentiment is even stronger among younger Australians, with 82% of 18, 34-year-olds believing that addressing the legacy is important. And plus, our stolen generations are getting older and sadly dying out. So we need to act now. Act now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to say that, you know, Kinchella have highlighted how they're working on the healing aspect, you know, putting together programs now that not only for the uncles but for their immediate families, their extended families.
Yes.
Because of what their pains are, have also and do also affect, you know, their families, their younger generations, their children and grandchildren.
And there's a generational trauma. There's the generational trauma.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. And, you know, I think it's good. Kinchella, our partner, has a school program. They do go into schools. The uncles take the bus. They've got all the information. They go in and share their stories.
And the stories need to be told, sister. The stories need to be told. And that's part of the
healing.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, totally. You know, and the children actually, when talking to the uncles the other week, you know, they really appreciate it.
Good.
And, you know, basically never heard of it, you know. And that's the sadness about it, is that but they're wanting to know more, and, you know, we encourage more for it to be, you know, included in that education. You know, truth-telling, you know, that's what we need to do.
Exactly.
That's what needs to happen.
Well, we're having a yarn here, my sister, keeping it alive, and government needs to act, and, here we are on National Talk Black and continuing that that yarn in circles has got to go wider, it's got to go bigger, it's got to have action behind it as well. Christine, thank you very much, my sister. Listen, all
no
the
worries.
Best and big shout out to Mob Deer up there,
thank
Darwin. We'll yarn soon, sister.
No worries.
Thanks,
Trevor.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Deadly yarn there. That's Christine Ruzzi and First Nations Programs Associate Director with Caritas Australia. And just working on, talking about the time is now to address this legacy. And our stolen generations are getting older, and we must listen and learn from them in order to heal as a nation. Australians want to see more government support for the stolen generation, and we sound like a broken record, don't we? Have your say in Yarn Up Strong. Over to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
I'm a long way away from my country. It's a long time since I've reappeared. It's the feeling I feel when you're close on the wheel, and I'm missing the touch of your It's no good, this feeling of sorrow. Just go out and face it alone. And I'm waiting tonight, a watch in the night. And I'm thinking of just going home. So come on, you restless young rider. Come on, you young roving kind. Unless you're prepared, it's not like you've heard. 'Cause you'll find that you run out of time. Come on, you restless young riders. Come on, you young roving kind. Unless you're prepared, it's not like you've heard. 'Cause you'll find that you run out of time. But it's not like it seems, 'cause your heart will just turn you around.
Hey, we get on your mob, it's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program, Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
faster. You keep on taking, digging down deeper, losing my high vibration. Oh, I feel my body aching. Give me that good energy, good energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me. Just give me that good energy, good energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me. See, I'm getting tired of your shit. Just give me that good love. Hey, sister, sister, you just know they can't resist her. All that money, ain't it funny how they act? And I won't let you dismiss her. She's our mama, she's our healer. Keep on trying, keep on fighting, take it. Give me that good energy, good energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me. Just give me that good energy, good energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me. I'm getting tired of your shit. Just give me that good love.
Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to the News National News Radio Service. Have you seen Yarnup Strong, 1-800-422-416. Now, with the article, Indigenous Women and Intimate Partner Homicide in Australia, confronting the impunity of policing failures, has been published in Current Issues in Criminal Justice and reveals that Indigenous women are more likely to experience violence than any other Australians. Now, with that, I'm going to catch up a yarn there with Sister Professor Kylie Cripps, Monash Indigenous Studies Centre Director. On the line, Professor Kylie, good morning, Sister. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. How are you? I'm good.
Good. Fantastic. Welcome. Thank you for coming to the program. Before we start, Sis, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
I'm a Palawar girl. I'm originally from Tasmania, but at the present time, I'm in Melbourne on the Kulin Nations.
All right, beautiful. And big shout out to all the First Nations, your mob, and then also down there at Melbourne as well. Look, nothing beats black on black. Congratulations, being a professor, a black one at that. But if you look at these studies here, look, very rare, you'll find a non-Indigenous person doing such a study. We're talking about 151 Indigenous women's deaths, prompting calls for greater accountability. Work needs to be done, and it's great that there's a black person there holding the reins in regard to the research and to push for justice, yes?
Yeah, thank you. I think, you know, it is important that as Aboriginal people that we are involved in studies such as this. You know, it's talking about our mob,
yes.
And it's about respecting the importance of our stories in respect to our experiences of violence. And, you know, these stories are horrific, and they are also stories that, you know, create an opportunity for us to hear the strength and resiliency of our women, but also their families, and to honour and respect both the women that have passed away, but also their families, because their families have been part of the fight for justice for these women.
For sure. And when we're talking about 151 Indigenous women's deaths, are we talking domestic violence? Are we talking about the investigation in regard to those deaths? Are not a lot of, meat on the bone. There's not a lot of push and not a lot of work that's being done that should be done. Is that right?
Yeah, so these are 151 women that were killed by their intimate partner. Okay. So these were often fellas that killed their women. And, you know, these were partners that... that for some of these women, they'd been in relationships with these guys for less than a year for 25% of them, up to 10 years for another 22% of them. So, you know, some of these relationships were long-standing. And then the other important thing to note too is that a significant number of them were mums. There were approximately 154 children who would have experienced the loss of their mum, and likely their dad too, had he been the offending parent.
Be going to jail, of course. Exactly. Yeah. So they'd be, they'd be parentless, all children, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know from these reading these case files too that at least 39 children are recorded to having witnessed the violence and possibly the homicide. So this demonstrates the importance for these children of sustained access to trauma-informed care so that they have the support they need to understand the circumstances that they've witnessed and that that they can process the losses that they're experiencing as well.
So, Professor Kiley, since it becomes a avalanche, a snowball effect, we're talking about loss of life of a mother, father being in jail, the scarred mentality for our children, and then parentless, and then we're talking foster care, then we're talking children in care. A lot of our elders call that the 21st century stolen generation, and it just creates havoc across the board, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and it is about, you know, how do we look at how we prevent these deaths, and that's part of the reason why I did this study, was to look at first responders, because when we look at first responders, you know, first responders are those ones that, you know, had they been there and provided assistance when our women are called, then
they'd be still with us
the
today.
Opportunity to prevent a death is obvious. And so this paper looks particularly at the patterns of policing and at critical moments. So it looks at calls for domestic violence orders or to men being called out for breaches to those domestic violence orders.
Exactly.
And it's case files. Is that there were consistent failures and consistent moments where it's a bit hard. And then police have second-guessed them and said, do you really want a domestic violence order?
They don't want to do the paperwork.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah, and that's what led, I think, to one coroner who had examined 18% or nearly 18% of the inquests and investigations into the deaths of these women. He said that what he was investigation, but, you know, when you look at it, the only explanation or excuse offered to us for the failures and mistakes in these cases are that they are the result of incompetence and misjudgment. And he goes on to say, or to quote, incompetence does not, without more, become discrimination.
Exactly.
But mere incompetence cannot of itself account for the whole catalogue of failures, mistakes, misjudgments, and lack of direction and control, which bedevils these cases.
Mm.
And he says if it's not institutional racism, then perhaps it's lazy policing, just trying to find the easiest way to wind up an investigation, or perhaps it's cultural ignorance. These are profound statements to domestic and family violence. similar statements around systemic racism and sexism and misogyny.
Well, if the shoe fits, if the shoe fits, Professor. Yeah. And I was just going to say to our deadly listeners that they just tuned in, Professor Kylie Cribbs, having a yarn here with Trendy Trev. Professor Kylie is Monash Indigenous Studies Centre Director and talking about the systematic racism embedded in Aboriginal women. 151 Indigenous women deaths. Look, prompting calls for greater accountability for authorities in responding to domestic and family violence. And with the findings, Professor, what do you do with these findings? Who do you take this to? To what ministers? Action needs to be done here at the high level and not just at the respondents, first contact.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we need to learn from these women's deaths. You know, these women's lives matter to all of us, but especially to their families.
Yes.
And we honour their memories by doing all we can to improve their systems, the institutional cultures and the societal attitudes that failed to hear them and their cries for help. And so this article is the first of several that will come out engaging with their stories that are embedded in these coronial records. And my hope is that people will engage with them, that it will contribute to the Senate inquiry that is taking place into missing and murdered Indigenous women and children.
Mm-hmm.
But further to that, the police and other institutions will engage with this material.
Yes.
And they will critically reflect on what is needed in terms of improving their accountability. And in addition to that, that we also think more systematically about how we're going to produce accountability with oversight structures. So I'm urging Australia to sign up to the UN Global Femicide Watch Initiative so that it's not just us or our governments oversighting our practices, but we also have international oversight, and that additional scrutiny might help us to adopt new practices and opportunities to improve our systems for the better.
Yeah, true though. Professor Kylie, thank you so very much. Very important findings need to be acted upon, and this information needs to go to the right authorities to prevent all this from happening. 151 is too many. 151, too many. Thank you very much for your yarn. Great work of what you're doing there, sister. So very important. And speaking for the unspoken and the innocent, the people who can't speak, women and children who can't speak.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you.
I thank you very much for your yarn. Please do keep in touch. All the best. You stay warm, Kylie. And we'll yarn soon, sister.
Yeah, we will. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Bye-bye. Beautiful yarn, sad yarn. Professor Kylie Cribbs, Monash Indigenous Studies Centre Director, and talking about the studies and the findings in regard to systematic racism with Australia's justice system is linked to 151 Indigenous women's deaths, prompting calls for greater accountability of authorities in responding to domestic and family violence. We need to stamp it out. We need to act on it, and that's 151 too many, as I mentioned, and condolences going out to our families who've lost loved ones due to domestic violence, and we need to be strong together as a community mob. Stay tuned, add to the conversation here, National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416.
I'm driving now to home, see my family, and I'm wondering if this old car will make it gradually. Dust and the heat is really killing me. Haven't been up this way in years. There's a sign saying we're close, and with my time I'll make the most and spend my time with my family. We'll go out where we should be. I listen to my grandfather's stories. I won't be in a hurry. Spend my time with my family. Oh,
there's nothing much to see, just red sand. As I drive closer to our place, there's a smile on my face, 'cause I can see some houses and some people there. When I drive across the river, I know I stay here forever. Spend my time with my family. We'll go out where we should be. I'll listen to my grandfather's stories. I won't be in a hurry. Spend my time. Spend my time with my family.
With my family.
We'll go out where we should be.
Where we should be.
I'll listen to my grandfather's stories. I won't be in a hurry. Spend my time with my family.
With my
everybody.
Family.
I'll spend my time. We'll go out where we should be. Listen to my grandfather's stories. I won't be in a hurry. Spend my time with my family. I'll spend my time with my family.
Delhi Mob, love family. Family, blood is thicker than water. This is your Delhi program, National Talk Black. Trendy Trevor Murray from the Curry. About to sign off you, Mob, for today's program. Thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow. That Delhi number, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black, 1 hour program live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji country. And we go across the country thanks to News and National News Radio Service here at Bummer Bripper Media, BBM 98.7 FM. But stay black, stay delicious, stay strong.